Albany, thank you very much. Whoa. This is a large crowd, a raucous crowd. Whoa. And a very loud crowd. And let me apologize for the 2,000 people outside who couldn't get in, but we appreciate it. Let me thank Formula 5, Brian Mayer, Jim Ferrillo, State Senator Bill Perkins. And let me say a word. I appreciate Bill's support because this campaign, not too surprisingly, is not getting a whole lot of support from elected officials. We are taking on the establishment. And every now and then, there is a brave man and woman who's elected, who's prepared to do the right thing, and I appreciate Bill's support. And I want to thank Jim Hightower for the years and years of activism in the fight for a progressive America. Jim, thank you so much. Brothers and sisters, this is a campaign on the move. This is a campaign that has the momentum. This is a campaign that has won 8 out of the last 9 caucuses and primaries. And with your help, on April 19th, we're going to win here in New York. This is a campaign. When it began, we were 65, 70 points behind Secretary Clinton in national polls. Last week, 2 polls had us ahead of her. This is a campaign in national poll after national poll that is defeating Donald Trump by double digits. And the reason that this campaign is doing as well as it is because we have the guts to be honest with the American people and tell the truth. All of you know that whether it is our personal lives or our political life, the truth is not always easy to take, but unless we deal with the reality of America today, we will not have the future we require. And here is the truth. The truth is that today we have a corrupt campaign finance system, which is undermining American democracy because billionaires and Wall Street and other powerful special interests are spending hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars to support candidates who will represent the wealthy and the powerful. That is the truth. Not going to be talked about too much on TV or in the newspapers, but the truth is that unless we turn this around, our country will be moving toward an oligarchic form of society. And together, we are not going to allow that to happen. Democracy to us is one person, one vote, not billionaires buying elections. And democracy is not Republican governors trying to suppress the vote. Our job is to revitalize American democracy, increase the number of people who vote, not decrease the number of people. But it's not just a corrupt campaign finance system that we have got to change. It is a rigged economy. What this campaign is about is asking people to think outside of the box, to challenge the status quo, and to understand that the status quo, what we live with today, does not have to continue existing. We can change it. And here is what a rigged economy is about. You're not going to see this on TV too often as well, which is a whole other issue of the role of corporate media in today's society. And the issue there is that you and the American people have got to deal with the real issues. You have got to determine what the issues are, not CNN or ABC. And here is the real issue. Look, if we were a poor country, for whatever reason, we would have a certain type of discussion. We'd say, yeah, you know what? We would like everybody to have a good education, everybody to have health care. We'd like to have a strong infrastructure, but we are a poor country. We just can't do it. We are not a poor country. We are the wealthiest country in the history of the world. But most people don't know that because almost all new income and wealth is going to the top 1%. Somebody asked me, a reporter, how can we afford all these things you're talking about, Senator? Well, I will tell you how. In the last 30 years, there has been a massive transfer of wealth in this country from the middle class to the top 0.1%. Trillions of dollars. Well, you know what? We're going to get that money back into the middle class. Here is what a rigged economy looks like. A rigged economy is when the top 0.1%, not 1%, 0.1% now owns almost as much wealth as the bottom 90%. A rigged economy is when the 20 wealthiest people in this country own more wealth than the bottom half of America, 150 million people. A rigged economy is when one family, the Walton family of Walmart, owns more wealth than the bottom 40% of the American people. And let me tell you how a rigged economy works. It's not just inequality of wealth. It is that the Walton family who owns Walmart pays their workers wages that are so low that many of those employees are forced to go on to Medicaid or food stamps. And you know who pays for those food stamps and Medicaid? You do. A rigged economy is when the working people of this country subsidize the wealthiest family in America. So I say to the Walton family, get off of welfare, pay your workers a living wage. What a rigged economy is about is today we have moms out working, we got dads out working, we got kids out working, we have marriages struggling because of the stress of economics, we have children not getting the attention they need from their parents. Today, not widely known, but today in America, our people are working the longest hours of any people in the industrialized world. You all know that? We work, the Japanese are very hard workers. We work longer hours than do the people in Japan. But at the end of all of that, of people working 50, 60 hours a week, people working two or three jobs, people working longer hours for lower wages, at the end of all of that, 58% of all new income is going to the top 1%. Now, on Thursday night, I'm going to be on a plane heading to the Vatican. Pope Francis, to my mind, has been an incredible leader in talking about massive levels of income and wealth inequality all over the world, talking about outrageous levels of youth unemployment, of youth poverty, talking about what happens to older people who are isolated and alone and don't have the money they need to live with dignity. And I applaud the Pope for speaking out on those issues. And what he wants, what he is working on, is the concept of how we create a moral economy, an economy that addresses human needs, not just the greed of the people on top. And let me be very clear and tell the billionaire class in this country, their days when they get it all are going to end. We are going to create an economy that works for all of us, not just the 1%. But it is not just the corrupt campaign finance system that we have to address. It is not just a rigged economy. It is also a broken criminal justice system. What this campaign is asking the American people is to think outside of the box. Think outside of the status quo. And here is an example. I want you all to ask yourselves why the United States today has more people in jail than any other country on earth. We are spending $80 billion a year to lock up 2.2 million Americans, disproportionately African American, Latino, and Native American. If elected president, we will not have more people in jail than any other country. We will get to the root causes of these problems and address them. We will understand together that when you have youth unemployment in this country of white kids between 17 and 20 who graduated high school having 33% unemployment rates or underemployment rates, Latino kids 36%, African American kids 51%. We're going to be investing in our young people, in education and jobs. Not in jails and incarceration. All of us, black, white, Latino, Asian American, we are tired of looking at videos on TV of unarmed people who are killed by police officers. We have got to put an end to that. I do not want people of color, walking the streets fearful about what may happen to them. This is America. We can do better than that. And let me just say this. I am the former mayor of the beautiful city of Burlington, Vermont. And in that capacity, I work with our local police department. I work with police officers in one capacity or another all over the country. The vast majority of police officers are honest, hardworking people who have a very difficult job. But let us be very clear. When a police officer, like any other public official, breaks the law, that officer must be held accountable. Let us also be clear that we need to train police departments all over this country to understand that lethal force is the last option, not the first option. We need to demilitarize local police departments. We need to make police departments reflect the diversity of the communities they serve. We need to end corporate ownership of prisons and detention centers. Corporations should not be profiteering from the imprisonment of fellow Americans. We need to end the so-called war on drugs, which has been a failure. Over the last 30 years, millions of Americans have received police records for the possession of marijuana. And when you're a kid and you get a police record, that does impact your ability to go out and get a job. And this is a racial issue because it turns out that the black community and the white community do marijuana at about equal levels. But blacks are four times more likely to be arrested than whites. We have got to understand that today, under the Federal Controlled Substance Act, marijuana is listed as a Schedule I drug, the highest level, right alongside of heroin, which is a killer drug. And that is why I have introduced legislation to take marijuana out of the Federal Controlled Substance Act. In our federalist form of government, it is states who determine or make the decision whether or not marijuana is legal or not. But in my view, it should not be a federal crime. Let me read to you an article, an Associated Press article that just appeared a few hours ago, which talks about the corruption of our economic system today. This is what it says. The Justice Department on Monday announced a $5 billion settlement with Goldman Sachs over the sale of mortgage-backed securities leading up to the 2008 financial crisis. The deal resolves state and federal probes into the sale of shoddy mortgages. They use the word shoddy. The real word is illegal. Before the housing bubble and subsequent economic meltdown. In other words, and this is the system that we are living in, and this is the system we have to change. Goldman Sachs is one of the major financial institutions in our country. What they have just acknowledged to the whole world is that their system, what they do on Wall Street, is based on fraud. They are a fraudulent organization. And while $5 billion may sound like a lot of money, for a company like Goldman Sachs, it is not a lot of money. But it is not only the financial institutions, and Goldman Sachs is not unique. Other large banks have paid even larger amounts of money in settlement cost. You got an entity today on Wall Street, which is the most powerful entity in our country. They have unlimited sums of money. Six largest financial institutions have assets equivalent to 58% of our gross domestic product. And yet, this powerful entity, the most powerful group of institutions in our country is engaged in fraudulent activity on a very large scale. But it's not only Wall Street. It is the fossil fuel industry. The Exxon Mobils and other companies within the fossil fuel industry have spent millions of dollars setting up front groups which are trying to deny the reality of climate change. But it is not just Wall Street or the fossil fuel industry. We have a pharmaceutical industry today that has 1,300 paid lobbyists in Washington, D.C., working overtime to make sure that we all pay the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs. That is an economy that is based on greed, is based on fraud, and together we are going to take them on. Let me take a few minutes to talk about some of the very significant differences that Secretary Clinton and I have on major issues. I think you can tell a whole lot about a candidate by the way he or she raises the money that they need in order to run a campaign. When we began our campaign 11 months ago, we had to make a decision. Do we do what every other campaign does, Democrat or Republican, and that is establish a super PAC? That is exactly what we concluded. And frankly, it wasn't a very hard decision. We don't represent the billionaire class or Wall Street or the drug companies or the fossil fuel industry. We concluded we don't want their money. We don't need their money. But what we did is something unprecedented in American history. We said to the billionaires and the special interest, you could keep your money. We're going to go out to the American people. And what has happened, I never in a million years would have believed to be possible. Since we began this campaign, we have received over 6 million individual campaign contributions. That is more campaign contributions than any candidate in the history of our country at this point in a campaign. Anyone know the average contribution? I love that. $27. Now, Secretary Clinton is raising her campaign funds in a very different way. She has established a number of super PACs. Her largest super PAC recently reported that it had raised $25 million from special interest organizations, including $15 million from Wall Street. In addition to that, as you may know, Secretary Clinton has given a number of speeches behind closed doors on Wall Street. For $250,000 a speech. Not a bad day's work. Now, I kind of think that if you're going to get $250,000 for one speech, and by the way, she gave three speeches before Goldman Sachs, if you're going to get $250,000 a speech, it must be a brilliant, earth-shattering speech. It must be a speech which will probably transform our country, if not the world, in its brilliance. It is probably a speech written in Shakespearean prose. And therefore, I think if this speech is as brilliant and perceptive and earth-shattering as it must be for $250,000, the Secretary should release the transcripts. Now, Secretary Clinton has said that she is prepared to release the transcripts if everybody else does the same. Well, I am prepared to announce here in Albany, I will release all of my transcripts. Which is not difficult for me to do because there are no transcripts. You know, my cell phone is on, and I continue to wait for that call from Wall Street to invite me to give a speech there. And I don't want $250,000. I don't want $2,000. I don't want anything. I want the opportunity to tell them that their greed, their recklessness, and their illegal behavior harm the lives of millions of Americans. And I would like the opportunity to tell them when three out of four of the largest banks in America today are bigger than they were when we bailed them out because they were too big to fail, we have got to break them up. Now, let me talk about where Secretary Clinton and I have some very significant differences, and that is the issue of fracking. And I want to congratulate the people of New York State for having the guts to tell the governor and the fossil fuel industry, you will not accept the poisoning of your water. In 2012, I was very proud that my state of Vermont became the first state in America to ban fracking. And we are seeing that movement proceed all across the country. The growing body of evidence tells us that fracking is a danger to our water supply, our most precious resource. We cannot poison our water. In my view, if we are serious about safe and clean water, and we must be serious about safe and clean water, we need to put an end to fracking, not only in New York and Vermont, but in every state of the country. And it's not only poisoning our water. The threat of methane emissions from fracking presents a profound danger to our climate. This is above and beyond poisoning our water. As you know, methane traps more than 84 times the heat of carbon dioxide. While natural gas may burn cleaner than coal, the enormous explosion of fracking and the resulting release of methane presents a significant danger to our planet. When we talk about the differences between Secretary Clinton and myself, it is important to remember that in the year 2002, Congress debated the most important and significant foreign policy issue in the modern history of our country. I listened very closely to what President Bush and Dick Cheney and Don Rumsfeld and all the others, what all the others had to say about Iraq. I listened closely. I did not believe them. I voted against the war in Iraq. Secretary Clinton, who was then your senator from New York, heard the same evidence. She voted for that disastrous war. This campaign is listening to the people of our country, not just wealthy campaign contributors. We are listening to workers who tell us they cannot make it on $8 or $9 an hour, which is why we are going to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour in every state in the country. This campaign is listening to senior citizens and disabled veterans. And they are telling me they can't make it on $11,000 or $12,000 a year Social Security. Nobody can make it on $11,000 or $12,000 a year Social Security. My Republican colleagues in the Senate, they got a brilliant idea. Millions of people today are living in poverty because they don't have enough Social Security. Republicans want to cut Social Security. Well, I've got some bad news for them. We're not going to cut Social Security. We're going to expand Social Security benefits. This campaign is listening to women. This is a loud crowd. Jeez. And what women are saying is they are tired of going to work earning 79 cents on the dollar compared to men. And that gap is even greater for African American and Latino women. The women of this country want the whole damn dollar, not a part of it. And this campaign is listening to young people. And by the way, one of the most gratifying aspects of this whole campaign is that when we began, a lot of the pundits and all these great political experts, they were saying, well, young people, you know, they're not interested in politics. They're not interested in government. They're too busy playing with their video games or whatever. Well, it turns out that the young people understand that they are the future of our nation. And they want to determine the future of this country. But what young people are telling me is something very profound. They are asking, how does it happen when our parents, our teachers, the whole community said, you have got to go out and get the best education that you can? We live in a highly competitive global economy. We need the best educated workforce if our economy is to do well in the decades to come. And the young people are asking, how does it happen after we go out and get the best education that we can? Why are we finding ourselves $30,000, $50,000, $70,000 in debt? Now, if you think outside of the box, if you think outside of the status quo, just take a deep breath and ask yourselves, if all of us believe that education and learning is an inherent part of who we are as human beings, if all of us know that we need the best educated workforce in the world if we're going to do well in the future, why should we be punishing millions of people for getting an education? We should be rewarding people who got an education, not punishing them. And here is another point. And that point is that today, in many respects, a college degree is the equivalent of what a high school degree was 50 or 60 years ago. 50 or 60 years ago, you had a high school degree, you were considered to be pretty well educated, and you could go out and get a decent paying job. Well, the world has changed, the economy has changed, technology has changed. And today, the simple truth is that people need more education if they're going to get decent jobs. And that is why I believe that when we talk about public education today, it is not good enough to be talking about first grade through 12th grade. That was a great idea 50 years ago. But today, when we talk about public education, it must include making public colleges and universities tuition free. And we also have got to deal with the crisis of millions of people suffering on the very high levels of student debt. And that is why I believe that people with student debt should be able to refinance those loans at the lowest interest rates they can find. Now, there are people out there, my opponent and others, who say, you know, Bernie, you're Santa Claus, you're coming up with all these free things. How are you going to pay for free tuition at public colleges and universities and lowering student debt? And I'll tell you how. I will tell you how we do it. But this is thinking outside the box. After Wall Street, through their greed and illegal behavior, helped destroy our economy, they went to Congress and they asked and got a bailout. Now, I believe that today it is totally appropriate to impose a tax on Wall Street speculation. Which will bring in more than enough money to make public colleges and universities tuition-free and substantially lower student debt. This campaign is listening to the African-American community. And I have to tell you, in this campaign, my eyes have been opened. I have traveled all over this country. A couple of months ago, I was in Flint, Michigan, talking to parents who told me something that was hard for me to believe was happening in America. They were describing how the cognitive capabilities of their children were being destroyed by lead in the water in that city. I was in a section of Baltimore, Maryland, where Freddie Gray was killed. And in that community, the unemployment rate was somewhere near 50%. You didn't see a whole lot of men in that community because many of them were in jail. Many of the buildings in that community were boarded up. There was not a grocery store in that building where somebody could buy fresh produce or meat. And there was not a bank branch in that community. People had to go to payday lenders and get ripped off in order to cash a check. I was in Detroit, Michigan, listening to teachers telling me that the public school system there was being destroyed. And today I met with some people here in Albany who talked about the incredibly high rate of poverty in the African American community. And what the African American community is asking me is, how does it happen that we could spend trillions of dollars on a war in Iraq that we never should have gotten into? How does it happen that we could give billions of dollars in tax breaks to the wealthiest people in this country But supposedly we don't have the resources to rebuild inner cities in America. Brothers and sisters, if we make it to the White House, we are going to change our national priorities. We're going to rebuild inner cities. We're going to make sure that every community in this country has clean drinking water. We're going to rebuild our roads and our bridges and our rail system. And not only will that improve the lives of our people, that type of investment will create 13 million good-paying jobs. The America that I want to see is when young people in the African-American or Latino community are getting the job training they need to rebuild their communities rather than going to jail. This campaign is listening to the Latino community. There are 11 million undocumented people in this country. Many of them are being exploited because they have no legal protection. Many of them are living in fear and living in the shadows. The Latino community and I want a comprehensive immigration reform bill. And a path toward citizenship. This campaign is listening to a community that very few people are listening to, and that is the Native American community. Any of you who have studied 5 minutes of American history understand that the Native American people, from before this country became a country, were lied to, were cheated, and treaties that they signed were abrogated. We owe the Native American community more of a debt of gratitude than we can ever repay. And among many other things, they have taught us that as human beings, we have got to live as a part of nature, not destroy nature. If elected president, our relationship with the Native American community will change. Now, I have been criticized many times for saying this, so let me say it again. No ambiguity, no confusion. I believe that healthcare is a right of all people. I am on the committee that helped write the Affordable Care Act, and the Affordable Care Act has done a lot of good things. We have ended this obscenity of pre-existing conditions. We have added some 17 million people to the ranks of the insured. And we have done away with discrimination against women who were paying premiums that were too high. But we have a long way yet to go. Today, 29 million people have no health insurance. Many of you are underinsured with high deductibles and copayments. And every day, the drug companies of this country are ripping us off, charging us the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs. And on top of all that, we end up spending almost three times more than the British, 50% more than the French, much more than the Canadians for health care. They guarantee health care to all people. And that is why I believe that we need a Medicare for All single-payer program. All over this country, we have Republicans running around talking about family values. It's important that everybody here know what they mean by family values. What they mean is no woman in this arena should have the right to control her own body. I disagree. They mean that our gay brothers and sisters should not have the right to marry. I disagree. Everybody here knows that real change always takes place from the bottom on up, never from the top on down. A 100 years ago, when workers were being exploited, had no say about their employment situation, they came together and formed trade unions. 400 years, African Americans and their allies stood up and fought back, sometimes in incredibly dangerous situations where people were killed, were jailed, were beaten. But together they said that the day will come in America where we'll end bigotry and racism. People forget this. People forget this. But 100 years ago, which is no time at all from an historical perspective, women in America did not have the right to vote, to get the education they want, or do the work they wanted to do. 100 years ago. But women stood up, fought back, and said very clearly, women will not be second-class citizens in this country. If we were here in this arena 10 years ago and somebody jumped up and said, Bernie, I think that gay marriage will be legal in 50 states in this country, the person next to him would have said, you are nuts. What are you smoking? Ain't gonna happen. But it did happen. And it happened And it didn't happen because a conservative Supreme Court thought it was the right thing to do. It happened because millions of people demanded that it happen. And right here in your state, state of New York, what you have shown is what can happen when people stand up and fight back. You told the governor, you told this governor that you were prepared to take on special interests and the fossil fuel industry. You did not want your water to be poisoned. And you told this governor that people can't make it on $8 or $10 an hour. Raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. Change comes about when millions of people look around them and they decide that the status quo is simply not acceptable. Whether it is worker exploitation, racism, sexism, homophobia, whatever it is, people say, sorry, we don't want it anymore. And I believe that we are at that moment in American history. We are at that moment when people are looking around them and they are saying, sorry, we should not have grotesque levels of income and wealth inequality. We should not be having the highest rate of childhood poverty of any major country on earth. We should not be seeing middle-class workers having to work two or three jobs. We should not be the only major country on earth that doesn't guarantee paid family and medical leave, or health care to all. We should not be a country in which millions of our people are paying off outrageous levels of student debt. We can do better than that, and that is what this campaign is about. It is a campaign that tells you very honestly what no other candidate for president will tell you. And that is no president, not Bernie Sanders or anyone else, can do it alone. We need a political movement. A week from tomorrow, on April 19th, there is going to be a very, very important Democratic primary. And what I have learned in this campaign so far is we win when the voter turnout is high, we lose when it is low. Let us next week have the highest voter turnout in the history of New York State. Thank you all very much.